Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we are learning together Megillas Esther, Perek Yud, the 10th and last chapter of the book of Esther. This has been quite a journey. At this point in time when we're listening to Megillah, we're completely not thinking about the words. Usually this is the end of the fast of Esther and we're feeling quite famished and the Megillah looks like it's ending soon, so we're tuning out. But we miss these very important psukim, which close capstone of the Megillah. Perek Yud has three psukim in it, and it is a very interesting topic. It is the topic of how the king Ahasuerus placed a tax on his countries and his states and islands. And then it describes all the strength and all the achievements of Mordechai and ascensions in power are written in the books of Chronicles to Persia. Because, and the last pasuk is, Ki Mordechai Hayodi, Mordechai the Jew, Mishne Lamelech Achashverosh, was the second in command to Achashverosh, V'gadol HaYehudim, was great to the Jews, strong for the Jews, V'ratzui L'roi V'achav, was accepted, was adopted, was appeased by the most of his brothers, of his brethren, and Doresh Tov L'amoy, seeking good for his people, V'dover Shalom L'chol Zaron, speaking peace for all of his progeny. So the question we could ask ourselves over here is, why is this perek necessary in the Megillah at all? Would we be missing anything out from the story if we'd ended by Esther and Mordechai sending the letter of how to keep Purim? I don't think so. So why is this included? Ibn Ezra points out that the reason why this is included, in fact, is to tell us that it was because of Mordechai's advice that ends up allowing Ahasuerus to be so successful. This is all the success which is achieved by listening to his Jewish advisor. So it's a certain lesson, meaning to say, you bring Mordechai up in your ranks, you succeed, you're able to levy more taxes. Emmanuel Haroimi, interesting Pirush from a little while back, says a very interesting thing. He says, it's not just that. It's that because Ahasuerus supported the Jewish cause and did not allow them to sink into genocide, allow them to stand up for themselves, it was that itself which was the cause which made him succeed financially in his empire. So there's a lesson to be learned, so to speak, from those who are looking into the Persian annals, the Persian chronicles, is that yes, it pays to support the Jews. Another Pirush, the Yesh Elohim, points out that despite the letters which allowed the Jews to fight for themselves, which you may have thought would lead to anarchy, civil war, a destruction in the streets, it actually led to a stronger empire and dominion. Similar kind of thing to Emmanuel Haromi. And finally, just an interesting perspective is the Mechir Yayin, much longer Pirush of the Megillah, says an interesting point, and he says that no, this is actually a metaphor about the human experiment. He points out that the word Ahasuerus in this perek is actually spelt deficient. It's missing what we're called, it's not male, it's chaser. It's missing some of the vowels in it because it's actually referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, in this. And what is being described over here is that in this world, there is a tax on being in this world, and it's a high tax and it keeps getting higher. It's very difficult to live here because we should realize is lulei hatov hamakuveloi ba'olam haba. That it's not about what you're paying off and all the suffering and all the tragedy and loss in this world. It's about the world to come. And so to speak, the Megillah ends off with this metaphor of life, saying, understand that this is not the be-all, and this is certainly not the end-all. And finally, the last, and perhaps I would say rather sobering perspective, last point to ponder over here, is the description of Mordechai in the last pasuk, which is described as Ratzui L'roi V'chav, is accepted by most of his brothers. Now, most means not all. So why not all? What happened? So Ibn Ezra says very simply, well, it's just not possible for one leader to be accepted by everybody. Just ain't possible. Why? There are too many different claims. Maybe another reason is because there's too much jealousy. Everybody thinks that they should be the one in power. After all, if there's a position, we're going to have two candidates, right? There's never going to be that everybody thinks that one person is worthy and capable. There's always going to be problems. There's going to be partisanship. It's always going to be very difficult. In fact, to me, it actually just, from the leadership perspective, it always strikes me as fascinating that Mordechai on the one hand is Ratzui L'Rovechav V'Doresh Shalom L'Chol Zaroi. On the one hand, when it comes to all his progeny, which we're going to assume doesn't mean nepotistically just referring to his children, but referring to the whole nation, He's Doresh Shalom Lechol Zarai. Everybody he's looking out for. But not everybody cares for him. And I think that's a pretty apt description of a leader. A leader is a person who tries really hard for everyone. Lechol Zarai. But the comrades, the colleagues, they don't always appreciate that because they think that they should have got it after all. Then maybe did we not go to school together? Don't I remember being at his bris milah, that rabbi, right? Mordechai was a little mischief maker in my backyard. Why should he be, right? And so there, sometimes you hear those voices and you realize that it's not possible for a Mordechai to be rotzoi l'rov echav, even though he's doresh shalom l'chol zarai. That's a really interesting perspective. In fact, the Gemara says that one of the reasons why it is that Mordechai is a Mishneh la'melech hachash, is Ratzui Adi l'Rav Echav, is because in fact he was rejected not by necessarily the peanut gallery, he was rejected by the Sanhedrin themselves. Why would the Sanhedrin, the court of law, so to speak, push Mordechai out? And the answer the Gemara says is because he invested himself more in society. Why? What's the problem with that? So the Torah Temimah explains that, yes, it is true that at the beginning Mordechai was critical to the mission of saving the Jews. And therefore, he needed to be that person who was the interlocutor, and he was speaking to Esther and Achashverosh, and he was, you know, he was being the intermediary and working things out. But after everything had died down, and now the Jews are surviving, he did not need to throw himself fully in. He, so to speak, changed careers. Before, he was a sage, he was a dayan. He was a judge, he was a decisor, and now he moved into the realm of politics. He ran into the realm now. Was that good for the Jewish people? No question. Was it going to produce good results? Yes. But in the end of the day, it was still a movement away from perhaps where he himself would have shone best. In fact, Rav Yehoshua Bachrach points out at the end is that Mordechai is our model for the leader in Golos. If you want to think back to an earlier model of the almost identical, is from the same side of the family, from the Rachel side of the family, is Yosef in Mitzrayim. Here we have the foreigner who arrives on foreign shores as an exilee and rises to the highest single rank under the king and achieves international reform through his siyata dishmaya, his charisma, his intellect, and his hard work. Isn't that what Yosef did? Yosef changed the known world, made Egypt the empire at the time of a crumbling world through this famine, and was ultimately somebody who, through his personality, was able to essentially run the entire world. Isn't that exactly what's been told to us about Mordechai? And yet the tragic thing is that both Yosef and Mordechai died in Golos. Even after their amazing success, they never left exile. And in fact, not only did they never leave exile, yes, Yosef's bones returned later on, but they were not able to bring the Jewish people, or the Hebrews at the time of Yosef and the Jewish people at the times of Mordechai, they were not able to bring that people out of exile. They remained the leader within the political system of a foreign country. Isn't that fascinating? And by the way, Aliyah is happening right now. Think about this. Already at this point in time, historically speaking, Yeshua, Kohen Gadol, Zerubbabel have made their first attempt at Aliyah. According to Chazal's way of understanding the timeline, we're just about to have Ezra and Nehemiah. Right? This is in the moment, this is a crucial moment where you needed a leader who's going to say, let's go and make Aliyah, let's go and bring the community together. And yet Mordechai is not that person. And that's perhaps exactly the point of the Megillah. This is the model of leadership which we're going to see throughout the millennia. We're going to see people who rise through the ranks, who are going to know politics, who's going to be able to impact the situation of the diaspora Jew, but not even succeed in bringing the diaspora Jew to the land of Israel. That's the Mordechai model, says Rav Yehoshua Bachrach. That's the Yosef model, a necessary stepping stone to the next point, which is ultimately the Geula Shlema. It ends on a sad and very technical note about taxes and Jews in foreign governments, because that's the way Esther ends, that's the way the rest of Golos goes on, which is why this is one of the last Sfarim which is included in the canon of Tanakh, because this is what it's like for these 70 years of Golos and for the 2,000 years of Golos after the second Beis HaMikdash as well. With this, we conclude Megillas Esther and understand some of the global significance that it presents to us. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.